Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Shooting the Rift by Alex Stewart. Narrated by Timothy Andres Pabon.
Chapter 1, in which a familial disagreement leads to an impulsive decision.
I'm extremely disappointed, Simon.
My mother paused for emphasis.
When I was a lot younger, I'd always assumed she did that to underline the gravity of whatever offense I was supposed to have committed. But these days, I had a state-of-the-art neural interface entwined around my synapses and could easily sense the data cloud surrounding her. Less than half her attention was actually on her wayward son, the rest devoted to the fluctuating data streams connecting her to her ship. So I stared past her shoulder, through the window of the dockyard office she'd borrowed from Aunt Jenny, wondering which of the drifting stars beyond was the Queen Kylie's revenge. Typically, I'd been dragged all the way up to the main orbital for this exhibition of parental displeasure, while Mother just hopped a few dozen miles from the outer moorings in the captain's gig. Idly, I dipped a probe into the data current, testing its speed and direction. Her ship must be one of those pinpricks of light, drifting above the luminescent limb of the night face of Avalon, where the hidden sun was just beginning to catch the edge of the atmosphere. Directly below us, the planet of my birth, technically at least, since I actually entered the universe a few dozen miles above its surface, in the sick bay of HMS Virago, Mother having left things a little too late to catch the shuttle home once the contraction started, was speckled with the warmly glowing lights of cities and towns. Knowing my mother, I couldn't help wondering if she'd been just as deeply meshed into the Virago's datasphere that morning, more concerned with making a good impression as the new second officer than the business of giving birth to me. But that was unfair. Probably. Before I could fix the Revenge's position any more precisely, Mother's outgoing datastream threw my probe off with a white-hot sting of heavy encryption, far more toxic than the protection I'd breached so easily at the university. If she was aware of my brief attempt to mesh, however, she gave no sign of it, just frowning as she continued the well-worn mantra of her disapproval, which meant dragging Dad into it, of course.
And so's your father. Aren't you, Harold?
Yes, dear. Extremely disappointed. My father nodded, trying to look as though he cared, but a quick dip into his data cloud, civilian neurosuite blocked as thoroughly as my own from anything up here that might be interesting, showed most of his attention was on a multi-way link with his fishing cronies, finalizing the arrangements for a trip they were planning the following weekend. Noticing my presence, he kicked me a virtual of the lodge. Old style, rustic furnishings, and a wood-burning stove, which would never be needed with the modern environmental system, but a fire always made a room look cozy. There's a spare bunk if you want to disappear for a few days.
Not this time, I sent back. I could hardly think of anything more boring than failing to catch fish with a group of middle-aged fleet widowers. Besides, if Mother found out, she'd give him a hard time for indulging me when I was supposed to be in disgrace.
Dad nodded, almost imperceptibly, and picking up on the subtext. He was good at that. But then we'd had a lot of practice. Warship captains don't make a habit of taking their families with them on deployment. So, he'd brought up my sister and I pretty much single-handed, while Mother was off defending the Commonwealth. If he'd ever had any ambitions or dreams of his own, he'd never mentioned the fact to me, abandoning them in favor of marriage and fatherhood as dutifully and uncomplainingly as men of his class were supposed to. Mine too, come to think of it, but I'd always wanted something more out of life. A reflection which sparked an all-too-familiar flare of resentment. Maybe if I'd held it in until Mother had finished chewing me out, like I usually did, my life would have resumed its even tenor of suffocating tedium, and I'd have avoided the inconvenience of so many people trying to kill me in the months to come. But I could feel the pressure of innumerable petty slights building into a tidal wave of bile, overriding any attempt at caution and restraint. All those years of my mother's withheld approval, her eloquently unexpressed disappointment that her firstborn hadn't been a girl, all the encouragement and support my sister had been given, even after ruffling everyone's feathers by bucking the family tradition
and opting for a career in the Marines instead of the Navy, while my own interests had been patronized and ignored. All those times I'd been labeled a problem for showing a bit of initiative, even if I hadn't quite thought through the consequences of acting on it. "Well, perhaps I'm disappointed, too," I snapped back without thinking. Mother's eyes focused on me as though her targeting ware had just got a positive lock on a fleeing commerce raider, and I suddenly remembered why getting her undivided attention had always been an uncomfortable experience for both of us. Dad shifted uneasily in his chair, and I didn't need his bad idea to tell me he wasn't happy with the way the conversation was going either. If anything, Mother seemed surprised. I suppose ship captains expect people to just shut up and do as they're told, a principle she generally extended to her nearest and dearest, and my flash of defiance had wrong-footed her.
"And what's that supposed to mean?"
she asked, in a voice that should have left Aunt Jenny's desk, with its scattering of manifests and requisition forms, coated with ice. "Exactly what it sounds like," I volleyed back, while Dad tried to become invisible in the corner.
"Nothing I've ever done has been good enough for you, has it? When I won silver in the district games, you told me I should have tried harder for gold. I got a college place entirely on my own, without you having to call in any favors like you did for Tinky. And you just said men don't need to be smart. And the only way you'd let me go at all was if I settled for a course a wife would find useful if I ever find one."
"Of course you'll get a wife," she said dismissively, as though the issue was already settled.
Knowing her, she'd have a short list of potential candidates on file somewhere. Then an expression of acute constipation flitted across her face, which was what usually happened on the rare occasion an idea occurred to her.
"Good God and all her angels! You don't prefer men, do you?"
"No." I had to fight the urge to laugh at that point, and I could see Dad trying not to smile too visibly as well. But then he'd seen a great deal more of my social life than Mother ever had.
"Good."
Heaven help me, she actually looked relieved for a moment, then thoughtful again.
"Although if you do, Admiral Joliffe's got this nephew. Good-looking, very poised. Quite a catch."
Which was the real point, of course. Finding a suitable spouse for me wasn't just about continuing the Forrester tradition of supplying generation after generation of cannon fodder to the Royal Navy. I was supposed to marry into the family of someone who could give Mother's career and social status a leg up as well. "If I ever change my mind, you can introduce us," I said.
"But you're missing the point."
Which wasn't exactly a surprise. Why should she break the habit of a lifetime? "How can you honestly expect me not to resent it when you won't even allow me to pick the college course I want?" If I'd been able to study something I was actually interested in, like neuroware design or gravitic engineering, instead of a subject my family deemed suitable for a man, estate management, in case you were wondering, but I can hear you yawning from here, I might not have been so bored. That setting up a lucrative sideline in information brokerage, all right, meshing into the admin system and filching test answers, had been just about the only thing keeping my brain from liquefying and trickling out of my ears. A hobby which had also boosted the meager allowance I got from my family more than enough to let me attend all the right parties with the cream of campus society, by which, of course, I mean the rich and thick, all of whom were profitably delighted to be in my circle of acquaintances, despite a social gulf so wide I would have been barely visible waving across it in the normal course of events. Then it all went sour, for which, if I'm honest, I had no one to blame but myself. If I hadn't got overconfident and sold Rosamond Kearney enough to ace her midterms, I'd probably have got away with my little avocation indefinitely. I could have landed a dame or a viscountess at some soiree a semester or two before graduating, maybe even Rosamond herself, who was nice enough in an amiably dim-witted sort of way, and settled into a comfortable life as the pampered husband of an aristo, or kept man, anyway. I had no illusions about the sort of welcome I'd get from Rosamond's family if she ever took me home to meet her mother. The trouble was, Rosamond was one of those students whose acceptance is tacitly understood to be more about funding than academic ability, and her sudden jump from a steady stream of D minuses to potential valedictorian raised more than a few suspicions. Which inevitably led to the proctors finding the ripples my fumbling around had left in the campus data pool. And it was swiftly made clear to me that my presence in the groves of academe was no longer welcome. After a few empty threats of criminal charges had been waved in my direction, despite everyone, including me, being well aware that far too many influential families would be embarrassed by such a thing for the affair ever to be made public, my university education came to an abrupt and ignominious end.
"There's more to life than doing what you want," Mother said, clearly relieved to be able to shoulder charge the conversation back to topics she understood, like honor, duty, and doing the right thing. "And that doesn't excuse you helping your friends to cheat."
"I wasn't helping my friends to cheat," I protested, indignant at the unfairness of the accusation. "I was helping anyone who was willing to pay me."
Dad groaned and buried his head in his hands. Mother's eyes narrowed, and I began to wonder if it was too late to switch places with the commerce raider.
"So it's come to this."
The words fell from her compressed lips like chunks of frozen helium.
5 generations of duty and sacrifice to produce a...
For the first time in my life, I heard words fail her. If it hadn't been so alarming, I might have savored the moment. Instead, I concentrated on not looking intimidated, which, considering her years of practice at making underlings squirm, wasn't as easy as it sounds.
"A common mountebank," she concluded at last,
having bought a few milliseconds to consult a thesaurus somewhere within her data cloud.
"That's right," I rejoined heatedly. 5 generations of foresters, going back almost as far as the first Rimward settlements, all of them joining the Navy because their mothers and grandmothers did. Did you ever think about doing something else with your life?"
"No."
Her voice was flat, with the unshakable certainty of the imaginatively challenged.
"I don't expect you to understand, but it's a proud tradition."
Then an unexpectedly wistful note momentarily softened her tone.
"I had hoped Katinka would continue it, but she knows her own mind."
"She's her mother's daughter, all right,"
Dad said fondly, startling us both. Locked in our duel of words, Mother and I had practically forgotten he was there, a skill he'd practiced over the years, and one which I strongly suspected contributed greatly to whatever marital harmony was to be found in the Forrester household.
"But the Marines are technically part of the Naval Service, so..."
"Do you have an actual point to make, Harold?"
Mother asked, returning her attention to me. I caught his eye. "Best keep out of it," I sent, appreciative of his attempt at a diversion, however futile.
"I'm the last Forrester in that unbroken line to wear this uniform. There's no one else."
For some reason, that casual aside stung me far more than anything else she'd said so far.
"Of course there isn't," I practically shouted back, "because Tinky's the only child you ever had, and if she wants to bugger off and play soldiers instead, that's the Forrester Naval Line sunk for good and all. It never even occurred to you that I could enlist instead, has it?"
To be fair, it had never occurred to me either, but I didn't see any reason to mention that at the time.
"Don't be ridiculous, Simon."
For a moment, it seemed, Mother oscillated between erupting with anger or with laughter, before compromising with an explosive snort of derision.
"An officer's son among the enlisted ranks. The idea's preposterous."
"Who said I had to be a swabby?" I retorted. "Men can be officers too, you know."
"Not on my ship."
This time the snort held a note of incredulity.
"I don't care what the so-called modernizers in the Admiralty say. Men aren't temperamentally suited to positions of command. And there's an end of it. They're too hot-headed to make sound tactical decisions."
Which I must admit wasn't just her own view. The numbers spoke for themselves. Fewer than 10% of the officers in the Royal Navy were men, and most of those were serving in administrative and support roles. None of the handful actually assigned to ships held positions higher than third officer. Strangely enough, though, the further down the chain of command you went, the more men you were liable to find, until the bottom tier of enlisted personnel was pretty much a mirror image of the gender balance at the top.
Are you seriously suggesting applying to the Naval Academy?
Dad asked, looking more surprised than Mother, if that were possible. I was about to laugh it off, admit I was only making a cheap debating point, when I noticed something else in his expression, almost hidden by his astonishment, pride, and perhaps a little envy.
Why not? I said instead. I got into Summer Hall,
which may not have been the most prestigious university at Avalon, but it was well up in the first rank, even attracting academics and research contracts from other worlds in the Rimworld Commonwealth. The entrance exams can't be that much harder, and as Mother never tires of reminding us, the Forrester name counts for a lot in naval circles.
Quite out of the question, Mother said. I won't see that reputation squandered on an act of the purest folly.
Anastasia, Dad said quietly, and Mother let go the breath she'd been inhaling. He hardly ever uses her given name, and when he does, she listens. Quite why, I've never worked out, but something changes between them. It's not as though he raises his voice. If anything, it gets quieter. But there's a sort of intensity to it that makes me feel like I'm 5 years old again, and I've just been caught with my hand in the jar of sherbet lemons.
Perhaps we should consider it.
You've often said he'd benefit from having something to think about besides himself.
I didn't mean he should enlist, Mother said, sounding as though she was just coming round after hitting her head on an unsuspected low beam. I meant charity work, or something else suitable for a man in his position.
What could be more suitable than carrying on the family tradition?
Dad said, and I began to wonder if I'd overplayed my hand a bit. But, thinking about it, I supposed I could do a lot worse than follow through on the impulsive suggestion. If I did manage to get a place as an officer cadet, I'd be removed from the orbit of Mother's disapproval for months, if not years, and the salary would make me financially independent for the first time in my life. She might even have a bit more time for me, once the idea that I was adding a sixth generation of Foresters to the roster had managed to percolate through her layers of calcified thinking.
It certainly couldn't hurt to apply, I said as persuasively as I could manage. And you have to admit, something does feel right about the idea of me carrying on the tradition if Tinky can't.
She was beginning to waver, I could tell, and I added what I thought would be the clincher. Until one day my own daughter, perhaps.
You'll need a wife first, Mother said,
returning to the comfort of familiar thought ruts.
He'd meet a lot of eligible spinsters at the academy, Dad pointed out archly, and most of them from good naval families.
He paused, waiting for her to run through the implications for herself.
I suppose he would,
Mother conceded, integrating this new and startling concept with her perennial preoccupation of getting me married off to the greatest advantage. She stood, in response to a sudden flicker of message traffic rippling through her data sphere, and nodded to Dad.
Very well, Harold. We'll discuss this properly at a more opportune moment.
Of course, dear,
Dad said, tilting his face for a perfunctory farewell kiss, as she swept from the room. As the door clicked closed behind her, he seemed to solidify, and turned to face me, looking a good deal less vague and ineffectual.
I hope you know what you're doing, Si. If you screw this up, she'll never forgive you.
I won't screw it up, I said. And at the time, I really meant it.
Chapter 2, in which my sister and I discover something we shouldn't have.
Where's my brother and what did you do with him?
Tinky demanded, striding through the French doors from the terrace and dropping her kit bag. Behind her, the muted hum of the rovers trimming the lawn mingled with the buzzing of the flitterbugs swarming around the rose bushes, the scent of the flowers overlaid with the sinus-tickling odor of new-mown grass, drifted behind her into the conservatory, where I'd settled shortly after breakfast. On the edge of my datasphere, the limited AIs of the gardening drones were flickering, barely noticed, just as the whining of their gravitics merged seamlessly into the soundscape of a sunny, south-down afternoon. Engrossed in my studies, I'd completely forgotten my sister was due to visit the family estate on embarkation leave.
Simon never looks that serious.
Aye, Tinky. I extricated myself from the data flow, my personal sphere shrinking to the neuroware I normally left running in the background. None of that merited my immediate attention, although there were a number of messages I ought to reply to, mainly from former classmates commiserating with me over my rapid rustication. It seemed I was missed, or at least the service I used to provide was. Forgot you were coming. If I'd surprised my family with the diligence I was displaying, I was no less surprised by it myself. But now that I'd committed to applying for the academy, I was determined to make the grade. All right, if I succeeded, I'd still have people like Mother telling me what to do all the time. But that would be by my choice, not hers. And once I passed, I'd be taking at least some decisions for myself. For the first time in my life, I could see a realistic prospect of a measure of independence within reach, and I meant to grab it with both hands.
Now that sounds more like my brother.
Her smile broadened, and I hauled myself off the battered old chaise my father doggedly refused to throw out into the path of a rib-crushing hug.
Good to see you too, I said, returning the embrace before I passed out from oxygen deprivation.
My sister had inherited Dad's build, short and stocky, while I took after Mother, in that regard at least, which left my chin resting on the crown of her head. We broke apart, and I felt the air rushing back into my lungs. Where are you off to?
Tintagel, Tinky said. The briefings are all strictly need to know, and junior lieutenants aren't supposed to, but a reliable source told me.
A phrase I'd heard many times before. Some clerk in the battalion office you lured into bed.
Believe me, he wasn't complaining.
Tinky looked distinctly smug for a moment.
Then again, neither was I. Kinda wish I could remember his name.
You better hope he doesn't remember yours, I said, mindful of the regulations I'd been wading through in preparation for the academy entrance exam. Fraternization between officers and other ranks. My sister grinned again.
We did a lot more than fraternize. Twice, at least. To be honest, it all went a bit hazy after that, but the hangover was definitely worth it.
I clearly hadn't kept my doubts off my face, because she reached up to ruffle my hair, something I'd always detested, and which she knew would be a reliable distraction.
Besides, you don't think I was stupid enough to give him my real name, do you?
Of course not, I said a little coldly as I pulled away. Like rather too many women, I admit, Tinky's attitude to my own gender could best be summed up as, of course I like men. I shag them, don't I? Without worrying too much about how the men concerned might feel about that. But she was still my sister. So I swallowed my disapproval as best I could, and tried to return the conversation to safer ground. And this fraternizee of yours said,
we're off to rattle sabers as close to Rock Hall as we can get, without the Leaguers being able to claim we're fortifying the place ahead of a negotiated settlement.
I see, I said, hooking the local star charts into my sphere from the Manor's data node. The Rimward Commonwealth and the League of Democracies had been squabbling over the sovereignty of the Rock Hall system ever since the first Commonwealth colonists turned up there a couple of decades before I was born, which by now meant that the place was thoroughly infested with native-born Rock Hallers who felt like Commonwealth citizens to their bones and weren't about to listen to any Leaguers whining, "We saw it first." If they wanted the place so badly, they should have left a garrison behind when their own colonization effort collapsed. Most of the time, the League just accepted the fait accompli, but every now and then, they'd get arsy about it, usually just before or after an election. This time round, the hardliners had won a majority in both houses of government, so things were unusually tense on both sides. Which puts the Leaguers in Caprona if they're playing the same game. Tactically, that was a no-brainer. You don't grow up in a family like ours without being able to read a rift map. And Caprona was the nearest League system with enough logistical support to mount an invasion from. Like Tintagel, there were only two rifts between it and Rock Hall to transit. So if the diplomats on either side fumbled their sessions of verbal rock, paper, scissors, it would just come down to which fleet was the quickest off the mark. Tinky meshed into my sphere, and I felt the tickle of fresh neuroware melding with my own.
You're missing the best bit, she said,
directing our attention to one of the two systems connected by a rift directly to Rock Hall. I called up the stats for it. Sadalagan, uninhabited, a few rocks devoid of interest orbiting an equally anodyne red dwarf. Two other rifts connected to it, one linking directly to Tintagel, and the other, the League outpost at Caprona. This'll be the flashpoint.
I can believe it, I said.
Unless one of the two fleets was hellishly fast off the mark and managed to slip through the choke point before the other could mobilize, they'd meet head-on in the Sodalagan system, and things would get ugly as soon as they closed to within firing range.
Could be an uncomfortable ride for you, if you're not first out of the blocks.
We'd both heard enough dinner table talk about naval engagements to have few illusions about that. Grandma never tired of reminding us that she first took command of a ship as a midshipwoman.
First cruise, mind, still wet behind the ears.
After all, the senior officers had been incapacitated by a rift bounce.
We will be,
Tinky said, with all the confidence I'd come to expect since her enlistment. Royal Marines pride themselves on being able to take the fight to the enemy wherever they are. Her cap badge read, Per inane per terum, and I truly think she barely saw the difference, apart from needing less life support in the latter case. When you come right down to it, though, despite the first part of their motto, Marines in a space battle were just so much perishable cargo, unless they were needed for a boarding action. What's that? I asked, indicating a data packet embedded in the Sadalagan stats. It bristled with the same kind of encryption I'd felt when I poked Mother's message traffic back on the orbital, and I was faintly surprised she'd been careless enough to leave something so clearly important lying around in an accessible node. It wasn't as though Dad or I could read it, of course, but it still wasn't like her. Then I realized the full significance of the sudden increase in data flow I'd noticed between the ship and her captain before Mother's abrupt departure, which at the time I'd put down to her feeling irritated at not being able to browbeat me into acquiescence as usual. The Queen Kylie's Revenge must have received new orders connected to the deployment, and in the hurry of preparation for that, she'd simply forgotten to delete the packet from the node at home. Not that any League spies were likely to find it there, but it was a definite breach of protocol, and I recorded its presence with a sense of gleeful mischief. The next time Mother started in on me, I'd have some potentially career-stalling ammunition to defend myself with.
Shall we take a look?
Tinky asked, no doubt with the same idea in mind, though Mother was slowly coming round to the idea of having an air diver for a daughter. She'd made her disappointment all too evident to begin with, and there was still a fair amount of lingering resentment between the two. Nothing like I'd had to put up with over the years, of course, but still enough for Tinky to relish putting one over on Mother if she got the chance.
I'm not so sure, I began, reflecting that it was one thing to know the file was there, and quite another to access the information it contained,
especially as the prosecutor would undoubtedly cite my little college enterprise as evidence that I was a hopeless recidivist, undeserving of the benefit of any doubt, should our nosing around ever come to light.
Don't be such a willy,
Tinky said, poking at it with a military-grade decryption key. The packet's defenses slapped it away, and my sister frowned.
Whatever that is, it's gotta be eyes-only stuff.
All the more reason to leave it alone, I said, already knowing I wouldn't. I've never been able to resist a challenge, at least where sneaking in somewhere I'm not supposed to be is concerned, and the harder it was to pull off, the more determined I became. Meshing with the university pool had started out as nothing more than a puzzle to solve. It was only once I was in there that the idea had come to me to exploit the access I'd gained for money and social connection.
Course it is,
Tinky agreed, knowing full well I'd be on this like a terrier with a bone from now on. I pulled up the sneakware I'd put together at college and started fiddling with its data gnomes, patching in bits I remembered from the sting of Mother's encryption, molding and inverting them to reverse engineer a key. Tinky's decrypt was still floating in the shared data sphere, and I pinched off a few bits, adding them to the chain I was constructing.
Hey, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Your point being, I asked, to deflect any questions about how I'd managed to get inside a piece.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?